at Monash University in Melbourne. Ruth Ross is not really a household name, but most New Zealanders today owe the way we understand the Treaty of Waitangi, or Te Tiriti o Waitangi as she called it, to this woman's groundbreaking historical research. Now, Bain Attwood has written a book called A Bloody Difficult Subject about this kaupapa and joins me now. Tēnā koe, Bain Attwood.
Morena.
Morena. What's the weather like over there?
I'm actually in New Zealand at the moment.
Oh,
you know, it's terrible.
It's terrible. Damn, I was imagining Melbourne on a balmy, I don't know.
Afraid not. I was in Auckland until yesterday for a couple of days, and I was supposed to give a public lecture at the University of Auckland. And as you know, we did it online, but in person it was washed out.
So who was Ruth Ross, and why is she relevant to Te Riti o Waitangi?
Well, Ruth Ross was this, in my view, remarkable Pākehā woman who, in 1972, publishes an academic journal article. And as probably most people realise, an academic journal article is usually only read by academics, their students, but almost immediately her article is read out in the world. And since 1972, it's been read by lots of people, not just academic historians and students, but many, many people. And in my view, it's the most influential piece of work that any New Zealand historian, Māori or Pākehā, have ever written. It's become central to the way that most New Zealanders understand the treaty. I mean, the fact that we, or most New Zealanders, know that the treaty has two texts, the text in English and the text in Māori, the notion that these two texts, what they're saying, differs enormously from one another, the notion that it's the text in Māori, which is the more important. Those are arguments that Ruth Ross made in her article. It's not the most important things she was saying in her view, but that's the way I think most New Zealanders understand the treaty, and I think we can attribute this to Ruth Ross's work. And what I think is also interesting is that it's not that, yes, she made this argument in 1972, and we might say, well, that makes sense. You might expect a historian in 1972 or the early 1970s to say this because that's the time of enormous ferment. It's political ferment. It's the time that groups like Ngā Tamatoa are making arguments about Māori rights to land, to culture, to language. But Ruth Ross actually formulates her article, or her argument rather, 20 years before that. So in the early to mid-1950s, she starts to make this argument about the Māori text of the treaty. And this is unprecedented at the time because all New Zealanders, or practically all New Zealanders, including those like Aotearoa Ngāti, while they know that there are two language texts to the treaty, they all believe, including Aotearoa Ngāti, that it's the English text that is the most important text. They believe it's what's called the official version. And so Ruth Ross's attention to the Māori text is unprecedented, and she's insistent that it's the Māori text that is the treaty. And she says this because she knows, she's done the work in the early to mid-1950s, that of the roughly 540 rangatira who put their names, who agreed to sign the treaty, 500 out of the 540 have put their names to a version of the treaty that's in Māori. Only 40 of them had signed a version that was in English. And this led her to believe that, as I've said, that it's the Māori text that is, in her terms, the treaty, and that you needed to pay serious attention to what that version of the treaty said. And she is convinced that what the Māori text is saying, the conditions, the provisions of that text, are very different from the English text. And what I've discovered, I think, in doing the research is just some very interesting, and I think fascinating, about how did she come about as a Pākehā woman at that time. And she's trained as a historian, but she doesn't have an academic position. She doesn't have much authority. She's really something of an outsider. The title of my book, A Bloody Difficult Subject, that comes about because it's something that Ruth Ross says in 1972, and in a letter she writes to the editor of the New Zealand Journal of History, she says it's a bloody difficult subject. And it was difficult for her because her approach is radical at the time. It's so different. And she's working in isolation from other historians. And I think there's a key moment when she's doing this work. So in 1955, she and her husband, two young boys, they leave Auckland and they go to the far north. They go to the Hokianga, and her husband has secured a position as a teacher in the Māori school system. He becomes a teacher at a school in the Hokianga. Some of us might say that Hokianga is remote now. It's very remote in the mid-1950s. It's very much a Māori community. There hardly any Pākehā children in the school. And she lives in this community for 5 years, and at one point she teaches children in the school. She's hearing Māori being spoken all around her. She's frustrated that she doesn't know how to speak the language. But very soon after they go there, she makes some of the senior men, two or three of whom she calls rangatira, she makes them aware that she's fascinated by the treaty. And the story she tells in one of her letters are remarkable. What they show, they're so very lively. And she talks of a particular day where she brings out the Māori text of the treaty, the version of the treaty that's signed at Waitangi, but also at Manunu Mission, which was just up the road from where they're living in the Hokianga. And she enters into this conversation with at least two Māori men about the treaty. She's asking them how they interpret the treaty. And so this is the moment when I think she truly encounters, as it were, on the ground, a different way of thinking about the treaty. And she's fascinated by this. She wants to delve further, trying to understand how those Māori that she encounters, how they understand the treaty. And I think it transforms her work. So just living this. And one of the key questions is the question of translation. How was the English text of the treaty translated into Māori? And I think living in this community, hearing Māori being spoken, it makes her aware of, you know, how do you bridge, if bridge is the right word, between Māori and Pākehā. And she realises she comes to the view that, rightly or wrongly, she comes to the view that it must have been very hard for the British to understand how Māori understood the treaty that was being presented to them at places like Waitangi in 1840.
It's fascinating. I'm really interested to hear more about her, and it's a pity we don't know more about her. So we look forward to your book. Hey, so how will this... So is your A Bloody Difficult Subject about not only about Ruth Ross, but about the place of the Treaty of Waitangi in law and politics and New Zealand society?
Very much so. But I think, unlike others who've written about the treaty in recent times, the way I'd characterise their work is that most historians and lawyers and the like are trying to present a particular interpretation of Te Tiriti or the treaty. They're trying to persuade people that there is an appropriate way or a more persuasive way of understanding the treaty. I'm much less intent on doing that. I'm more wanting to say, well, there are different interpretations. They've changed over time, to try and explain how they've changed over time. As you've gathered, what role does somebody like Ruth Ross play? I'm trying to understand how Ruth Ross's article was picked up and read in ways that were rather different to the way she thought it would be read. I mean, unfortunately, she doesn't have a long life. She passes away in 1982. But at that time, she's aware that her article has been read in one way. But what she doesn't know, because it's yet to happen, is the way in which the law, particularly in the form of the Waitangi Tribunal, how they pick up her argument about the two texts and the differences between the two texts and her argument that the Māori text is the treaty. She's not aware of that when she passes away in 1982, because the first of the tribunal reports under the wonderful Eddie Jury have not been produced. Mm. And so part of the story I tell is how the law from 1983, lawyers, legal scholars, the courts in New Zealand, how they came to interpret the treaty from 1983. And so my argument is a way about, well, how do different forms of knowledge, whether it's the law, whether it's history, whether it's Mātauranga Māori, as compared to, if you like, loosely European ways of understanding the world, how all of them have particular or distinctive ways of interpreting the treaty, and really then posing this question, well, when you have these different ways of being in the world, these different ways of interpreting, how do Māori and Pākehā, how do New Zealanders negotiate, so to speak, these differences? And clearly this is a critical question. It's been a critical question in New Zealand for some time. And so I'm just interested in pointing out that, as the title of my book has, this is what Ruth Ross, if she was still alive, she would say, well, this is bloody difficult work. Let's make no mistake. Let's not fool ourselves that this is easy work. Let's accept that it's difficult and sit down and see where we get. And I know some of this work has been done in New Zealand, but it's saying, well, you know, this is difficult. I should say that, you know, the title of the book, yes, as I said, it comes from what Ruth Ross said on one occasion, but I think the treaty is a difficult subject. Ruth Ross herself, in interesting ways, a difficult subject. I think to be a woman of her generation, born 1920, the time she lived, it's very much a man's world. Well, of course, many of us would, and particularly women would say, well, it's still very
still
much
is
a man's world. But in her times, there's no doubt about it. And so, as you know, she enjoys the mentoring and patronage of some men, but there's ways in which those men who provide their patronage and mentoring and teaching, they realize she's a brilliant student, but I don't think they took any of their women students as seriously as they took their men students. Mm. They encouraged their men to go and do, you know, graduate work as you did in those times in places like Oxford and Cambridge, but they didn't encourage the women to do this. They thought, well, you know, the task of a woman was to marry and to have children. Yes, they could do some historical work on the side, but please don't make it central to your life. Yeah. But Ruth Ross, in some ways, even though she married, had children, and played the roles of wife and mother, she was deeply committed to her work as a historian, and part of the story I'm telling. It's a rather sad story, I think, that she's doing all this juggling of playing the roles. I mean, I don't know, many women continue to do this juggling, but in Ruth Ross's time, it's a real struggle.
Yes, fascinating. It sounds absolutely fascinating, and thank you very much, Professor Bain Atwood, for sharing these thoughts with you, and recommend that everyone should have a look at this, a bloody difficult subject. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to talk.